This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen. In this part of the program, we have an update about the 462 children taken from a polygamist ranch in Texas. And we'll spend some time with an investigative reporter who has written extensively about this sect called the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But first, the legal battle over the children's custody continues. There are hundreds of lawyers involved, representing the children, their parents, the FLDS Church, and the state. As NPR's Wade Goodwin reports, it's a very complicated situation.
While trying to sort through the intricacies of Texas family law, it's helpful to keep this in mind. When it comes to allegations of sexual abuse of minors, the law gives the state considerable leeway to protect the children's interest. So even though the state of Texas swooped into the Yearning for Zion Ranch and scooped up all the children and has now taken temporary custody of them, since this involves allegations of widespread sexual abuse, Texas Judge Barbara Walther has sided with the state, at least so far. When the state takes someone's child, it has committed a very serious interference with a parent's rights, and so the law requires that the state demonstrate to a judge's satisfaction that it has good cause for taking such an invasive act. This demonstration takes place in what is called a full adversary hearing. Parents on one side, state on the other, judge is the decider. But lawyers for the mothers claim that the hearing that took place in Judge Walther's court wasn't proper because it wasn't individualized. In other words, Texas child welfare officials didn't identify individual parents and individual children in their suit. So lawyers for the mothers intend to ask a Texas appeals court for relief. The problem is sorting out which FLDS children belong to which FLDS parents, and that is an issue that is confused so far. That's why the state conducted DNA testing. And until Judge Walther has satisfied herself that she can connect the family dots, an appeals court may be unlikely to intervene. Wade Goodwin, NPR News, Dallas.
As of now, all of the children from the polygamist compound have been moved into temporary foster homes. Authorities say two teenagers in custody are pregnant, and as many as 30 minor girls have children of their own. As Texas officials continue their investigation, we want to examine an issue that has received very little scrutiny or media coverage. Over the years, a number of children from the FLDS sect have been diagnosed with fumarase deficiency. It's a rare disease that causes acute retardation and severe physical problems. The disease has struck these children because of a recessive gene that has been spread through decades of inbreeding. John Daugherty is an investigative reporter who has written extensively about this issue. He covered the FLDS community and its leader, Warren Jeffs, for several years when he worked at Phoenix New Times, a weekly newspaper. And he's been covering the latest FLDS story for the New York Times, and he joins us from Springdale, Utah. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
First of all, what exactly is fumarase deficiency?
Fumarase is an enzyme in the Krebs cycle, and when it's deficient, it breaks down the ability of the body to process food properly. It also causes all sorts of physical deformities, as you mentioned, the most troubling of which is a large amount of water replaces brain matter, and the children who are born with this affliction have severe physical deformities as well as very, very low IQs.
Why is it occurring in the FLDS community?
It showed up as a recessive gene in the 1930s in one of the patriarchs, Joseph Smith Jessup, and he had more than 112 grandchildren by the time he died in 1953. And a lot of the cousins and grandchildren of Joseph Smith Jessup intermarried a couple generations later. And when they did that, it set the stage for fumarase deficiency to start to appear in the young children.
Now, most of the people living at the Texas ranch where the children were removed, they came there from the group's other communities in Colorado City, Arizona, and Hilldale, Utah. And you've written that as many as 20 children in Colorado City had been stricken with this disease and that the number was expected to grow because of the inbreeding between the two founding families. A Texas child welfare official said he doesn't believe any of the Texas children have the deficiency. In fact, he's never even heard of fumarase deficiency. What are the chances that some of these Texas children might develop it?
The chances are very high, according to the geneticists who have studied this extensively, including Dr. Theodore Tarby from the state of Arizona's Child Rehabilitative Services and other folks at the University of Arizona. the problem is that the Jessups and the Barlows, the two primary families in the fundamentalist church, have been crossing lines for generations now, and this recessive gene is going to continue to, at times, manifest in newborn children. So Texas is very likely going to have this problem. If it hasn't already occurred, it's probably going to occur very soon.
You reported that health officials in Arizona had asked FLDS members to stop these intermarriages to put a halt to the children getting this disease, and the answer was no? Tell us more about that.
The answer was no. Dr. Tarby went up and had a town meeting, I believe it was in 2004, met with the community and told more than 100 folks who were gathered that the situation is going to continue unless you stop the interbreeding. And the folks up there's response was, well, we're all related up here, and if a child is born with a genetic deficiency, that's God's will. It's God's test of us to handle the situation as it is.
Did the state do anything to follow up?
Not that I know of. The state's been very uncooperative in providing information concerning how many people have fumarase deficiency and how much it's costing the state to treat these children.
And so the taxpayers are paying money to provide health care for these children?
Oh, yeah. The taxpayers are paying the bill, probably the health care for these children. And the health care is expensive. These children need continuous medical treatment. It's just a tragic situation that's going to continue unabated because the fundamentalist church does not want to stop the practice that caused it to manifest.
You've been covering the FLDS community for several years. What's your take on the recent events in Texas? I mean, if there is child abuse and neglect going on within this sect, why didn't authorities in Arizona or Utah take similar actions in the past?
In Texas, the compound was surrounded by a fence and everybody was basically locked inside. In Colorado City, Arizona, and Hilldale, Utah, these twin cities, they're basically open communities and people live in individual homes. So the state of Arizona and the state of Utah did not want to go in and repeat the 1953 raid where Arizona came in and cleared everybody out, arrested all the men, women, and children, and separated them, put the women and children in foster care for 2 years before the Supreme Court of Arizona ruled that the hearing was unconstitutional, let the women and children return home. So Arizona and Utah are going on a case-by-case basis. If they receive a report of underage sexual abuse going on, they have been investigating. But an even bigger problem, which Texas is soon going to find out, is trying to get these young girls to testify against their spiritual husbands. This is not an easy task, and Texas is going to find it very, very difficult to get people to testify.
You've probably seen the mothers of the Texas children on television criticizing authorities for taking away their children. The Texas officials are arguing they need to do that because they want to make sure that the children are safe and that they aren't being coached by their mothers. What's your view about this?
Well, I think the children are going to recite exactly what they've been trained to recite, just like the mothers are saying exactly what they've been trained to say. This is a very, very authoritarian system. Every once in a while, you'll get a wild card in there who's willing to testify or speak up and tell the truth. But otherwise, they're going to say what they've been told to say. And now, separating the children out from their parents, people have to remember, in this culture, the parents do not believe the children belong to them. They are instructed by the religious leaders that the children belong to the priesthood. And the priesthood is controlled by the prophet. And the prophet is Warren Jeffs. If Warren Jeffs says that those kids should move to wherever because it will make for a better climate for their spiritual upbringing, they will do it. So the lockstep mentality here is extreme.
John Daugherty is a reporter. He is also president of Investigative Media, a company that specializes in investigative journalism, and he joined us from Springdale, Utah. We contacted the spokesman for the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints several times for comment, but received no response.
From Alabama, a new battleground in the immigration debate, some counties plan to enforce a decade-old law that requires a Social Security card to get a marriage license. From member station WBHM in Birmingham, Alabama, Andrew Yeager reports.
Nick Martin and Christina Prado are in love. They've been together several years and have a one-year-old daughter, Celindia, who likes to pound on her plastic white toy drum. Martin and Prado intend to stay together. They just didn't expect it to be so difficult to get married. The problem came when applying for a marriage license. Prado is an undocumented immigrant from Mexico, Martin is a U.S. citizen.
I was born in this country. I live in this country. I want to get married, and to have somebody tell me that I can't get married, you know, is kind of like a slap in the face to me.
It's a familiar situation to those in Hispanic communities. No social security number, no marriage license. However, actual enforcement of the law in Alabama varies. In Tuscaloosa County, officials take a strict approach to the law, requiring a social security card. For probate judge Hardy McCollum, it's just a matter of following the rules.
We at the local level, we don't make laws, we carry out the law. And whether you agree with it or disagree with it.
But McCollum's office didn't always take that hard line, despite the law being on the books for a decade. 2 years ago, the state of Alabama ordered stepped-up enforcement, and while he doesn't know exactly why, he believes it was one thread in the layers of 9/11-inspired security measures. This new debate puts the Roman Catholic Church in a very difficult position. The church forbids sex outside of marriage, but immigrants may disregard church teachings if the state prevents them from marrying. Father Tom Ackerman acknowledges the state's right to regulate marriages.
But I also have a certain moral obligation. Whatever their legal status is, they are Catholics. From the Catholic perspective, according to canon law, according to church law, they have a right to receive the sacraments.
When Ackerman performs a wedding, he acts on behalf of the church and the state. If the church believes the marriage is legitimate while the state does not, he says that encroaches on his religious freedom. In Pennsylvania last year, a federal court concluded a U.S. citizen has a fundamental right to marry, as does an undocumented alien. Nick Martin and Christina Prado hope that precedent will help them get married in Alabama.
Because I want my baby, she's brought up in a family, in a real family.
Their daughter was born with health problems and has already had 9 surgeries, and Prado faces a risk of deportation. Complicating factors in a situation sparked by want of a number and an official piece of paper. For NPR News, I'm Andrew Yeager in Birmingham.
A Saudi Arabian Muslim has decided that the cure for too much free speech is more free speech. The man is unhappy about what some see as an attack on Islam. It came from Europe, where the Netherlands is among many countries absorbing a lot of Muslim immigrants. Dutch politician Geert Wilders put out a video that matches up verses from the Quran with scenes of suicide bombings. Now comes the response. Not a protest or a riot, not this time. A Saudi businessman put out a video of his own. Reporter Carol Murphy sent this report from the Saudi capital, Riyadh.
Raed Al-Sayed likes to wear jeans, T-shirts, and a headset to his cell phone tucked in his ear. He runs his audiovisual company out of a rundown villa on a quiet, tree-lined street in Riyadh. Sitting at his cluttered desk, he remembers his reaction to fitna.
Well, after watching the movie, I felt like helpless. I can't do anything about it. Okay, what can I do to answer fitna, to protect my religion, to protect my wife's life, to what I believe in? Then I thought about, I'll do my best. At least I will not feel that I didn't do anything. I'll do my best. And my best was try to make a movie.
A part-time blogger, Saeed decided to use the same technique Wilders used in fitna. He took verses from the Bible and matched them with scenes of aggressive behavior by Christians. His point was to demonstrate that you can make almost any religion look bad.
It's not the right way to judge a religion by a video made by a guy who hates that religion. So anybody can do that. Anybody can do take any holy book, even the most peaceful holy book known in the world, the Holy Bible, can be taken out of context and making it look sound evil.
Saeed called his film Schism. It opens with biblical quotes, including one from the book of Samuel, urging the destruction of everything that belongs to the Amalekites. Do not spare them, it says, put to death men and women, children and infants, cattle and sheep, camels and donkeys. His 6-minute video then has footage that he got off the internet. One scene shows what appear to be Western soldiers in Iraq beating up alleged Iraqi insurgents. Another clip is a CNN broadcast of shock and awe, the 2003 aerial bombardment of Baghdad that opened the U.S. invasion of Iraq. A day after posting his video on YouTube, it was taken down for having inappropriate content. Saeed immediately reposted it with a message saying that if it is inappropriate, Wilders fitna should also be taken down. For now, both videos are still available at the site. And until recently, Schism had been viewed more than 230,000 times. Saeed said he's been gratified by the response, noting that many comments about it on YouTube were positive. Several Dutch viewers thanked him, adding that they disapproved of fitna.
I think that tells me that me and people who do like me, they're supporting their religion, closing the gap. We actually better than Bin Laden. We are serving our religion, the world, better than what Bin Laden did.
Saeed said that most viewers understood that he was making a statement about how religions are judged rather than defaming Christianity.
It's not my goal to attack Christianity. I wouldn't attack a religion and made by a prophet that I believe in.
And he believes he's well qualified to make his video. In November 2003, Saeed was at a residential compound in Riyadh when terrorists attacked with guns and a suicide car bomb. 17 persons, including 5 children, were killed and more than 100 injured. Saeed was not physically hurt, but the experience deeply affected him.
I've read about it. They say this attack has been done on a compound hosting FBI and CIA. And I've been there. I know all the neighbors. I know everybody there. There is a mosque in there. They pray there 5 times a day. I know what's in there. So after that, I was sure I'm against any kind of aggressive actions. But after that, I started to fight these kind of actions. I've been there, and it wasn't a good experience.
Having survived the horrific attack, Saeed is fond of saying that he now has a new birthday. And following the Arabic practice of putting the day first and then the month, he notes the irony of his new birth date.
It's 9/11/2003.
For NPR News, this is Carol Murphy in Riyadh.
I'm Renee Montaigne. Lawmakers in the nation's capital may be wringing their hands about record-high gas prices. Others are folding theirs, asking for help from a higher authority. Volunteers from a Washington, D.C. church have launched a movement called Pray at the Pump. As the group's leader put it, if prayer could bring down the walls of Jericho, surely it could bring down gas prices. Though honking a horn loudly might also help him here.